how do the soul, false ego, intelligence and mind interact with each other? The soul is spiritual. The the mind, intelligence and false ego, they are all part of the subtle body. And in general, if you look there, they are differentiated based on function, not based on structure. Like earth, water, fire, ether, you can differentiate. They are made of different structures. Earth is different from water, from fire. But the subtle elements, if you look in the Bhagavatam, third canto, principles of fundamental nature, they are described in terms of what the functions they do. So, to give an example, in a computer system, there is a hardware, software and user. So the hardware is a physical structure that we can see. The software is the interface between us, user, and the hardware. Now the software can be of different types. The software, you can have the operating system. Then you can have the pre-installed apps with which your device comes. And then you can have the user installed apps. So this is a rough example. Similarly, we could say that the basic software with which the body, the soul exists in the world, that is the ego. Then the intermediate software, which is used for accessing and functioning, the pre-installed apps that come in the computer, in the device, they are like the intelligence. User-installed apps are like the mind. It's a rough example. My point is that now, from the software perspective, whether it is the operating system or whether it is a user-installed app, all of them are just codes. And you cannot differentiate just codes by their structure, they're just codes. But we differentiate them by their function. That's why, in some analysis, Krishna just doesn't talk about the false ego. Sometimes Krishna talks about the false ego. For example, in the third chapter, when he talks about the hierarchy, 3.42, he says, Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhya param manaha manasastu para buddhe yo buddhe paratastu saha. So above the body is the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is soul proper. So where has the ego gone over here? No, Krishna doesn't have to talk about that. There he is talking about simply how the lust is situated, senses, mind and intelligence, and we have to understand that we as souls are beyond that. So in different frames of analysis, sometimes these three may be talked about analytically. Usually if we talk about analyzing, we talk about the mind intelligence dialogue. Mind is saying that the intelligence say this. So sometimes we may be able to differentiate, but generally there's no point in getting too analytical. So how do you, so when I talk about the ego over here, ego is basically pride. Now at one level we could say ego is the basic tool with which the soul interacts with the body. That is ahankara. So this is a little technical subject. The Bhagavad Gita, uses the word ahankara in two ways. It talks about ahankara as a conception and also talks about ahankara as an object, as a thing. It says ahankara vimudatma karta aham iti manyate. Because of delusion, the soul thinks I alone am the doer. Or ungodly people, they have a lot of ahankara. Dambho darpo abhimanascha. Or ahankaram balam darkam kamam krodham samshita. Mamatma pardehe shupadvishanto abhisuryaka. 16.8 Krishna says that the ungodly demoniac people are filled with ahankar. This is where Krishna is talking about ahankar as an emotion, as a conception that is present in people. Oh, I am so great, I am so powerful. But then Krishna also talks about ahankar as one element of the subtle body. Bhumirapo nalo vayu khammano buddhi revacha. Ahankar iti yamme vinna prakriti rashtata. So ahankar is one of the elements of the subtle body. Now, when Krishna says, nirmamo nirahankara ha, sashanti adigachati, those who are free from possessiveness and those who are free from ego, they will attain peace. Now, does that mean that those who are free from ego, does that mean in their subtle body, suddenly the ahankara will disappear? The ahankara element? No, the ahankara element is a function. It's a functional unit in the body. And it is always required. See, as long as I'm in the body, for functional purposes, I need to identify with the body. I don't want to fully identify with the body, but I do need to, for functional purposes, recognize, okay, what kind of body situation I am in. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at one time, he heard somebody singing Gita Govinda, started running towards that person to embrace them. And then his servant told him, it's a woman. Oh, I cannot embrace a woman. So what happened? Although he's a soul purely devoted to Krishna, in the particular body, and he has to be aware of that also, which body I'm particularly in, which ashram I'm particularly in. So the ego itself is not a bad thing. For functioning in this world, we need to identify with the body. But we don't need to fully identify with the body. We don't think that my identity is restricted only to the body. So when this identification becomes excessive, it's functional, it's good. But when it becomes excessive, when it becomes our sole identification, then it becomes a problem. So ego as a functional tool is required. But ego as a conception where I think I am so great, I am so powerful, I am this, I am that, that is not required. So now from the functional perspective, if I am working on a computer, now what am I interacting with? Am I interacting with the operating system? Am I interacting with the pre-installed app? Am I interacting with the user installed apps? I can try to find out, okay, I am working with the software. But the important thing is whether with the machine I am doing the work or not. So in general, to get too much into the analysis of what idea is coming from the ego, what is coming from the mind, what is coming from the intelligence, that will simply paralyze us. We don't have any torchlight to look inside our head or inside us, wherever it is. And the mind, intelligence, ego don't come with convenient labels. I am the mind, I am the intelligence, I am the ego. So basically, we function based on phalena parichayate. That if something takes us towards Krishna, if something takes us towards the right action, we say, okay, this is coming from the intelligence. Something is taking us towards the wrong action, we say this is coming from the mind. So where are they situated? General understanding is that because they are subtle, so you cannot exactly talk about a location for them in the way we talk about a location in precise physical terms. Yes, sometimes we say that our soul is situated in the region of the heart, but the soul is transcendental. So the soul is actually situated at a point where the five airs, prana, pan, saman, dan, udan, those five airs, they are five forces which move in five different directions. So the place where, if you consider these five airs to be like five vectors, where the point where the resultant of the five vectors is neutral, that is where the soul is situated. And for those who do Ashtanga yoga, that neutral point rises upwards, upwards, upwards. So the soul is normally, for most people, it is situated in the region of the heart. But it is not, soul is not bound to the heart. That's why people can have a heart transplant and the soul doesn't change, they don't change. So similarly, what I'm saying is, to try to apply the framework which we use for dealing with physical reality on subtle or spiritual reality, that itself is it's a endeavor fraught with presumptions. But if we can infer broadly speaking, where are earth, water, fire, air, ether present in the body? Everywhere. They are distributed. So similarly, we could say mind, intelligence, ego. The soul is here, so around the soul there is subtle body covering, and then there is a gross body covering. So this is subtle body covering is the first layer of covering on the soul, and the mind, intelligence, ego are situated over there. Now because they are not physical elements, so trying to pinpoint a precise physical location, this is a hazardous event. So wherever the soul is, they are the first layer of covering around the soul. And they act as the interface with the body. Now if I look at the software, where is the software present in my computer? I could say, okay, the software is present, okay, there's a RAM over here, there's a ROM over here, there's a primary memory, secondary memory over here, this is where my software is, this is where the data is. I could say like that. But from the functional perspective, the software doesn't just stay over there, software functions with particular tools. So I would say best not to get into too technical analysis, just focus on what the principle that which takes us towards Krishna, we consider that is where the software is working positively for us. Again, where if I have a software, a virus is also software, an antivirus program is also a software. But I need to follow the antivirus program, not the virus. So similarly, whatever is pratikul, whatever is unfavorable, we avoid that when it comes from inside. Whatever is favorable, and how do we decide favorable and unfavorable? Based on hearing from Guru Sadhu Shastra, based on our own, using our God-given intelligence.